Welcome to today's episode of Fire in the Belly. This is where we get to hear some pretty inspiring stories from some amazing people. You know, it's always an absolute pleasure to sit down, take time out, and have a warts and all conversation about their journey. I'm always intrigued by what it's taken for people to get to where they are today. And hopefully, in this interview, we get to hear some more about that. From this, my mission is to help people to find their own fire in their belly, and from that, to live the mightiest version of you. So without further ado, sit back, relax, and enjoy today's guest. Success is a process, not an event. Hello and welcome to the Fire in the Belly show. Today we have myself, Mighty Pete, and we're joined by the Beate Chalette. Good afternoon to you.
Mighty Pete, I can't wait to get started to talk to you.
Listen, it's an absolute delight to have you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on. So tell us, first of all, who are you, where are you, and what do you do?
And you say it like it's nothing. So
You've had your whole life.
I mean, you got to start somewhere, right? So my name is Beate Chalette. I'm known as the growth architect. I live in Los Angeles and I work as a strategist. And that means I devise blueprints, tools, and techniques for visionaries and leaders so they can make a bigger impact. And that means, if I translate it, that I work a lot in business growth strategies, in team building, and helping people just be a little bit more successful, or a lot more successful.
Wow, look at that. So what's your impact then? Let's go in on the deep end here.
My impact, well, so I always thought that at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, Mighty Pete, and you go to my tombstone, it will say, here lays a woman that is instrumental in defining women leadership.
Okay. Break that down. What does that mean?
So that means that I feel that when I, you know, I built and sold a business to Bill Gates after about a decade of just horrible adversity. I mean, adversity to the point where you go, it's not even normal that one person is going through all of this. And then I was asked to join the company, the Bill Gates company, as a senior director of global entertainment, which I did. And then I'm in the system and I'm going, wait, what? People work like this? This is horrible. The structure is terrible. It doesn't work for women. It doesn't work for anybody who's non-conforming. Frankly, right now, it doesn't work for men either. And so everybody's working in this corporate structure with its rules and regulations and performance evaluations and things. And I'm looking at this in shock and disbelief and say, this is not working at all. And so I quit. And I decided that it was time for me to go back out and really make a bigger impact on what I believe in, which is we need to humanize the workplace. And instead of, you know, following this system that we've built that, you know, from the minute you go into kindergarten to school to college, that this one person that can function in this structure then now can function in the corporate setting, but that's only a small percentage and that really needs to change. And so that's what the impact is I want to do, is to really go and change that. So more women, more non-conforming people, and men who don't want to be in the structure either can succeed on their own terms.
Oh, wow. So tell me, what is it you saw that nobody else seems to see? I mean, maybe the deuce do they see it, do you think? Or are you just particularly sensitive to this part?
I mean, I can sum it up in one sentence. I'm going to say a really bad word. Well, the system's shit. Okay. I mean, it is, you know, I remember one specific instance, Mighty Pete, that maybe sort of sums it up. Like you know, so I'm the senior director, so I'm doing the performance reviews. And I hadn't really done this in the system where you have to electronically type it in and, you know, do all these things and give the notes and the grades and stuff. And so I'm sitting in there and then it says in there, what do you want them to improve? And then what happens is you actually really think about what do you want them to improve, but you don't go about what can they improve or what should they improve. The question is, what do you want them to improve? But that's my biased opinion. So I can say, I want them to be better at pivot tables. But if they are not Excel spreadsheet users or hate it, or creative people, or, you know, are better at something else. Now I'm creating this horrible friction because I want them to do something that they're naturally not good at, that causes anxiety and stress. It makes them now wanting to leave their job because I'm terrorizing them into doing something. And so I'm looking at this, and literally every single thing is like that. So you come back on Monday, and then your boss tells you that something that was on the table to be decided on Monday had been decided over the weekend. And you go, well, when did that happen? Oh, I was playing golf with John and Smitty. Wait, what? How come I don't know about this? How come I wasn't invited? And so something happened I didn't have any influence over. Or, you know, it's these thousand little things where in an organization that compound to this large dissatisfaction where you go, why are they doing it this way? Why can I not go, and to stay with the example of the performance evaluation, why can I not set the parameters ahead of time as an organization and say, hey, here's our core values. Here's our vision and our mission. Here is the piece that I want to add, which is the fourth element, the leadership attribute. These are the leadership attributes we're leading by. And guess what? They're balanced. They're female and male. They're not just winning and competition and charging, but they're empathy and collaboration and community. So, hey, Mighty Pete, what do you want to work on over the next quarter in your performance? And then you tell me, for example, hey, I love strategy. I'm naturally good at strategy. But you know what? This empathy thing has come up a couple of times in my life now over the last months or so. I'm gonna really look into that. That's what I want to work on. Now we're having a completely different conversation. And I couldn't understand why we weren't having productive conversations. Why, when people went to talk to their managers, it felt like they went to the slaughterhouse. And it made no sense to me.
How many companies for you do you think actually got their shit together? I mean, you mentioned four things there: core values, vision statements, mission, you know, vision and mission, and, you know, even the leadership values. How many companies actually have that? I mean, a lot of people have kind of, you know, a bit of a rough copy and paste job slash, you know, McKinsey or someone else came in and we sort of thought, that'll do, that sounds great, that'll get the marketing department off our backs. Do you think people have it together? What's your take on that now?
Well, Mighty Pete, this goes, I think, a lot into what you talk about in your show, in your podcast, where we really ask is like, is that even real? Mm. I mean, is this, are you regurgitating the word diversity, for example, right? Which is what happened last year. So everybody's regurgitating DEI. Then they do a token Black woman, man, or a brown woman or man, and then put them in the chief diversity officer. And they go, problem solved. Done. Checkbox. But that's not really how this works. I think that the misconception is on what you do because of public pressure and what you do as an individual that really truly believes in the importance of what it is that you're actually doing. So, you know, I've had a conversation with a colleague, you know, a friend who is a Black gentleman, and he is the chief diversity officer. And at one point he said to me, it seems really interesting that the only C-level position there is for a Black man is the chief diversity officer. So that's bias in itself. And even he recognized that. He says, well, you know, it is very typical in my profession to be around a number of other Black men. So that really is, you know, to your point of the thoughtlessness, and that's kind of really what I want to change, is that I say, on whether you're an entrepreneur, whether you are somebody who is employed, whether you're somebody who's leading a team, whether you're the boss of the team, that you need to get really clear about what motivates you. I mean, if you are hiring based on the quota, then you can do that. But if you're hiring because you naturally look for the diverse viewpoints in your team, you cannot but hire diverse. It's just not possible otherwise. So I think that the mindset shift, that's really the impact that I want to make, that the mindset shift is, it's already all out there. It's not that complicated. If you were to really follow through on those true beliefs and core values you do have, the outcome wouldn't be possible in any other way other than in the best possible way, because that's how the universe works. It's a friendly universe. It's just us who make it a bad place.
Yes, well, yeah, absolutely. It's why is it important to you?
Because I love people. And I, you know, and it was so hard to get to where I am at. And so when I get to share something and then I see the lights come on, and then people go and they make something happen, and then they employ people, and then they are running a business, and they can put their kids in the schools they want to put them into, and they can find the relationships, and they can find the balance. I mean, there's nothing more gratifying in my world. I mean, I do so much pro bono work and mentoring, and I'm involved in different groups because I do believe in the giving principle. Hmm. And the giving principle isn't a giving and asking. The giving principle is inherent with the receiving, because it's the same principle.
What does giving do for you then?
Well, number one, it makes me feel good about myself. Number two, it makes me feel like I'm making an important contribution in other people's lives. It deepens my experience because I can see the world from the viewpoints of other people, and it makes me a better leader, and it makes me a better business owner, and it makes me a better podcast guest. It gives me a much richer experience in life, and I love that.
Hmm. That makes sense. And tell me, where are you at in your own journey? I mean, are you now where you're supposed to be, do you think? Have you caught up with yourself, so to speak?
No, not at all. I think that there was a point, so after I sold my business, and there we were sitting in this mastermind in Las Vegas, and I had for the first time mentioned this idea of the women's code that I then subsequently created. And it was like the whole room, and you know, this like three women and 250 men. And I said this, and then it got really quiet. And I said, I want to make sure that leadership is now from here on out, not just looked at as male, but that we actually can articulate what women leadership is as well. And then bring these, you know, and really make this a thing, so that we don't always talk about what isn't women leadership, but what is women leadership, which we still don't know. And it was so quiet in the room, you could have heard a pin drop. And then afterward, a friend of mine, Bart, came to me and he said, and I said, yeah, you know, I don't know if I want to take this on because it's a big thing. And once I get myself into it, I just sold my business and I got the money. Why do I need to go back into this? And it's going to be a lot of work. And I don't know if it's worth it. Should I? I mean, I know what it's like to work really hard. Do I really want to do this again? And then Bart just looked at me and he says, have you ever thought about that God gave you the gift of your first success so you can do what you really came here to do?
That's deep.
Mic drop moment. And then that really resonated. And so then I started. And then I made a big mistake. Then I stopped doing all this mindset work that I did. And I thought that I had arrived. I was a multimillionaire. I had done what everybody sets out to do. That's it. I'm untouchable. I'm on top of the world. All I must do is show up and then the success will appear. Guess what?
It doesn't.
It doesn't. What's wrong with that?
So cruel. So cruel.
It's unfair and cruel and miserable. And so I finally had to get myself back to, you know, the awareness with myself and say, who are you? who are you fooling? You got to keep, you know, to get where you want to go and to get, I mean, if you do it, you do it right. And if you do it right, you need to do what it takes to get there. And so I started, you know, back my mindset work and my working on myself and investing in myself and doing my personal development, even though I had already done it. And you just realize it's never over, because once you accomplish one thing, then the next thing shows up and says, well, that was just the first step. And you thought that was the only step. And God knows what's going to come after this. But I think this is the thing I came here to do. And I'm making a lot of progress now. But am I there? No. I want to do the TED Talk, not the TEDx, but the TED Talk. And I want to do, I'm in the process of writing the book. So, you know, working with a strategist, you need to get an agent. You know, that whole book publishing world has changed. And COVID really has clarified a lot for me on what is needed now. Because I think that before, when I went into the idea of the women's code, I didn't realize that there was another side to it, the men's code. And the men's code, while we perceive it as the old, outdated code, but there's still humans in the system that are also struggling, men. So I think what we are learning is that we can't build one system by the exclusion of someone else. So the system has to be built, this new system, this new business code, has to be built up on the inclusion of everyone. And that's what I'm working on right now. So no, I'm not done yet. As you can see, when you open your newspaper, it's not accomplished.
What part of it? I mean, and it's super interesting and interesting. You talked, you know, about the men's code and things. I mean, is there ever a point, and I don't know, I'm only saying this recently because there's been a lot of, you know, as you say, there's diversity. Suddenly it's like the hot topic and everyone jumps on that. And then there's the next thing and everyone jumps on that. And then the next thing. And but at what point do you unintentionally manifest a situation by actually highlighting it? Does that make sense? Because, I mean, there does seem to be a bit of a tipping point, let's say. You know,
yes.
Is all awareness good awareness?
Yeah, it's very interesting. I actually was just listening to a podcast today, a mindset podcast about that, where he said that if you focus on the flaws of one particular group, you start to project these flaws on all the other groups that you're around, because that's what you're training your brain to do. So I think you're absolutely correct about that. But I look at this from, you know, because I come from a business perspective. And so for me, I like strategies and systems and processes. And I like to design that in such a way that it has more room for more people. So I know that the systems, the way they are limited, because I talk to people all day that tell me that they're not working. And that's only on the external side. And that's not even their own internal stuff, their old programming and what they're up against. You know, the whatever 30, 40 years that you're bringing into of all your old programming of what your mom and your dad and your grandma told you, and all the well-meaning relatives and bad ex-boyfriends and partners and girlfriends that don't really want you to succeed. So yeah, no, there are a lot of layers in there. I can only trust my intuition. I can only trust spirit, God, the universe to guide me. And I can only say I'm showing up every single day. And what happens though, Mighty Pete, I think this is really the differentiation factor, is that I always say that you don't know the second step before you take the first step. So when people say, I can't start because I don't know the path, well, duh. The path can't show up. I mean, you can't see the mountain top unless you get out of the forest and you are at a certain elevation where you get around that corner and you can actually see it. I mean, you just have to trust that it's there. So I think a lot of it is like that when we go into these journeys, we have to trust that this is what we are here to do and what we're meant to do. And then really pay attention to how it shows up, because God delivers all the time.
What makes female leadership so, what's the right word? Strategic.
I don't necessarily know if female leadership per se is strategic. I think that when we look at the origin of sort of where leadership really even comes from, right? Leadership comes originally from survival. So if we go back in the cave that you and I lived in, and when you left, you picked John because John was the fastest runner, and you picked Matt because he was the best skinner, and you picked Eric because Eric was the guy who had the strategy and your skill set was to assemble the team and do whatever. You didn't care if you liked any of the guys. You just knew they were the best. And that's all you were interested in because you had a very specific objective that needed to be achieved. And that's all you focused on because you had to survive. You had to hunt and kill the mammal, bring it back. That ensured your survival, the survival of your family and your children and the race. In the meantime, women were left in the cave. We may have gone to get water together, but we certainly carried our own water. And if something would happen to you, then the only way I can ensure my survival is I'm going to have to take someone's partner away. I'm going to have to go after Eric or Matt or Scott. And if that partner is allowing me to do that, that's on her. Does that sound like something women are still doing to some extent today? Is that they believe that we are dependent on someone else, specifically men. And so as leadership for women started to change, women had this idea of likability and, you know, and the collaboration, because when we were raised, when I was raised, I was very specific: be a good girl, don't speak out of turn. That's not what a good girl does. Good girls do exactly what they're told, when they're told, and they follow orders exactly by their mothers, by their teachers. They don't stand out. They let the work speak for themselves. They have to be humble. Do not brag ever. Don't put yourself in the center of attention. And so we taught all these things that don't work when you are becoming a leader. Because as a leader, you have to lead. You can't want to be the good girl. Like, do I look now today like I care if I'm the good girl or not? I mean, on whether you like me or not is completely irrelevant. I mean, it's great if you do. And I think I'm a very likable person and I work very hard on that, but that's not my criteria. And I think that when we talk about women leadership, we look at all the things that women try to do that don't work because we've never defined what it is. So women leadership in the women's code is based, I say it's called lead on cue. And that means we lead on collaboration, uniqueness, and empowerment. Those are the three pillars for women. For men, it's PSP, that's power, strategy, and persuasion. And now I'm just going to say that, of course, it's not for all men and all women because we are all individual, but for the purposes of making an assessment, the majority of men that are successful in organizations have to possess these skills. And the majority of women who are unsuccessful in organizations have to possess those exact same skills, but they're out of character, which is why women struggle.
That's what I was going to ask. I mean, and well, I suppose for yourself and for female leaders that you see, I mean, how many are leaving, you know, they're not putting it all on the table. You know, they're sort of trying to fill the role in the best that they can, but skills are being missed and only a part of them is turning up in some way.
Well, first of all, you would need to know what the skills are you're missing, which most people don't. It would mean that you have to have a lot of self-awareness. That means you have to listen to a lot of mindset stuff, do a lot of personal development and have radical honesty with yourself, because it either is or it isn't. And I want to say most people don't ever want to see, because it's easier to blame external circumstances than take responsibility that you're in the mess of your own making.
It's interesting because reflecting back, I mean, you talked about, you know, whether it's our, you know, whether it's a belief, you know, it's beliefs that we hold from our childhood or for whatever that we come all the way through. I mean, is it a belief? Is it a choice? Is it, you know, where is there a tipping point in where sort of junior to female leaders actually change their beliefs? They choose what they want. Is there a tipping point?
I want to say in my work, what I see is there was, I was working with someone, a woman leader, and she sent me her resume. And she said to me, I'm going to look for a new job. And she is, you know, a very, very, I mean, an excellent, excellent, super smart woman in technology. And so I'm looking at the resume and I called her and I said, you're justifying your experience. I said, you're still being the good girl. You're justifying, even though you're at the pinnacle of your career, you're leading a team of 100 people all over the world in technology as a woman. You still write a resume where it sounds like you need to tell them exactly what kind of programs and programming language you know. I said, at your level, I said, please don't do that. I said, the only thing at that level you're going to do is talk about the vision where you'll take a team. That's all you need to talk about. And she sent me a note and she said, you know, if it wasn't for you, she says, I have learned so much in how I show up as a leader. Before, I always tried to be like the men. Now I recognize that I can be a woman and that it's actually okay and nobody takes offense with it, as long as I own what and who I am. And so this is, you know, I don't know if this answers your question well enough, but I think that the tipping point really is where you recognize that you cannot function well on whether that's men or women. And I see more and more men who cannot function in the structure either, is when the pain of staying there is so intense that you just want to get away from it. And that's why so many people are quitting. That's why we see this great resignation and this run toward people setting up their own businesses, is that people feel that there's got to be something more where they can be more themselves. But it's not the job. It's you who needs to change for everything else to change. So we can only change the structure if we have enough people in there that are aware enough to make the changes on the structure, and then the structure will change.
Was that a tipping point for you?
Tipping point for me, I think my tipping point was when my father was a CEO at a dairy company in Germany many years ago, and he got fired. And I realized that he got fired by the board of directors because he, you know, that there's a thing in the board of directors where there is a, in Germany, is a trust question. So they take a vote on whether the CEO is still trusted. And the majority of the vote said no. And that meant immediate removal from the position. And I realized that I had taken all my self-esteem and all my value out of what I was, out of work. So I was who I was because of the job I had. And I was a photo editor at Elle magazine at the time. And I realized that I didn't want people to like me because of what I did and could do for them, but I wanted people to like me for who I was. And then I quit and my journey started. That was my tipping point.
You found yourself, or you were went seeking for yourself.
You know, when you have a moment like that and you realize the road you're on, you always have a decision to make. You can either look the other way or you can take action. I always ask the question, Mighty Pete, when I am in a uncovery session with potential clients, I always say, how loud is the voice? Is it yelling yet?
Is it just one?
I have not asked that before, but usually people know. They know.
Hmm. I talk about me, myself, and I.
Are you saying you have three voices going at the same time?
Well, I've got me that's talking. I used to have, and then thankfully through a number of things, they've moved on.
Yes, exactly.
They've moved on. But I used to call it, like, you know, myself was my rock thrower. So it was my critic. And I was sort of the angel on the other side, sort of trying to keep the peace. And me would be here trying to have this conversation, and it's noisy. So it would have been this three-way conversation. There's only one voice coming out, but there was three conversations going on. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's the yelling match in the head. That's when the subconscious, whose job it is to keep you where you are at, and the new knowledge, which wants to push you to where you want to go, and then your awareness of where you are at right now, get in a three-way conversation. Yes, you're absolutely correct. And that oftentimes is a yelling match. Like, you can do this. No, you can't. You can, you cannot. Or you make the commitment to change, and then you're in it, and you go like, this doesn't work. And you go like, well, you haven't even completed the process.
I used to ask people the same, do you hear voices? And people were like, do you criticize yourself? Yes. Okay. Yes. So that's my definition of you hearing voices. So yeah, I get that. Right? It's like, yeah, people are chatting away themselves. Where do you lean? I mean, in terms of sort of feminine energy and subconscious, do you follow that path at all? Do you?
I don't really give this a lot of thought. I mean, I'm in a relationship with an alpha man. And I think in anybody's book, a pretty strong alpha woman. But you make a decision, I think, in life, do I have to be an alpha all the time? And I think that's really what we're learning, and not just for women, I think, but as people, where we need to learn on when do we turn that on and when do we turn that off? Because if you're always an alpha and every moment in your life, that's pretty exhausting. And sometimes you need to be vulnerable, and sometimes you need to be in the feeling and the feminine energy, and sometimes you need to be in the hard charging energy, and it needs to be a balance. So I don't really think about this a lot. So maybe that means that I switch between one and the other, but I will tell you that if I go hard charging into my relationship after a tough week, that that we will have a conversation about this, you know, and Gary will say, all right, well, let's tune into each other now, you know. It's like, okay, all right, time to shift. He always calls it, let's shift back into the relationship, because you are out there doing your thing, and then and you come back and it's a fight and battle and.
What do you want for dinner? It's like, I'll take you. I'll have you. Different energy. Let's swap it up.
Yeah, exactly. It's really being aware of the energy and being able to take yourself in and out of it. I think that's really a great goal. When you have a partner who is aware, that makes it a lot easier. A lot easier.
How self-aware are you, or does that sort of reflection from another help?
I think I'm very self-aware. That's my personality type. And I'm pretty unfazed by failure. So I might be okay with bullshitting myself for a certain period of time, but that really doesn't last long, because at the end of the day, the fact is it working or not? And you know, these examples is so interesting. You know, I did a strategy meeting for a nonprofit, and they hired me because they know their process isn't working. And then we're in the strategy meeting, and they want to spend the entire time on explaining to me why their system is working. And at one point, I had to say, I am very confused. Your system is not working. This is why we're here. That's why you hired me. So why are we spending the time on explaining on why the system works after you hired me? Because you know it's not working. So where are we? Like, you know, the facts are what the facts are. It either is or it isn't. And I think that's where, you know, especially struggling entrepreneurs really need to have that come to Jesus moment with themselves to say, let's look in our bank account. Is what I'm doing working? Your bank account will tell you in great certainty in what, 5 seconds, on whether or not what you do is working. So then you can go back and say, well, I know whose fault it is. And I will say, it's your own. And then you say, but no, it's the environment. It's a pandemic. It's other people have it difficult. Well, there are people that are making a killing right now. So why are their businesses growing and not yours? Other people are having can stop the work from coming in. So what did they do that you are not doing? Why are other people happy and why are you not happy? So if it exists, it's possible. So why is it not possible for you? Oh, that's right. It has one thing in common. It's you. And I think that is for a lot of people, the awareness that taking responsibility that where you are is because of what you do and what you believe in. And that needs to change in order to get a different outcome. And then they keep doing the same thing again and again and again and try to get a different outcome. And we know that that is the definition of just insanity. But I see this all the time. Or, you know, I have somebody come in and they say, well, I'm so depressed and frustrated. And I always deal with other people's stuff. And then I don't do my own. I said, well, then stop doing it. I mean, how difficult is that? Well, so your problem isn't that you're doing it. Your problem is that you're doing it so you're avoiding to do something else. Well, now that we have to look into. And now we do the discovery and then we go into it. And then guess what? You're going to find out things that you're not want to hear, which means that you've done a phenomenal job avoiding to deal with the things you need to be dealing with because you don't want to. And now I'm telling you that the only way for you to change is to deal with the things you don't want to deal with. Well, that's like a real shocker. And then guess what? In order for you to change, you're going to actually have to change. But that's what I think the self-awareness that we talked about, Mighty Pete, is so difficult for so many people because they don't want to. They want to do what they do and get the different outcome. They don't want to change.
I'm curious, you change tenses sometimes between I and my. Is that something you're consciously aware of?
That's probably from a lot of the writing that I do because I do a lot of writing, and so when you do a lot of writing, you have personal experiences, and you have to make it, you know, turn into what the audience. So that's probably just a piece that's inherent.
Mm. No, it's fascinating, I think, and even, you know, there. I suppose, and again, as you were speaking, I'm just thinking, how many leaders are sitting there with voids being their values? And it's kind of almost just being careful because that sort of, you know, really that sort of Jenga, you know, you unintentionally start sort of looking and working on some of those voids. You could end up with high-powered exec is suddenly disempowered completely and you've totally blown up their whys. Everything else and you're left with a bag of something. I don't know. It was just a sort of a curious observation that came flying through my mind as you spoke. It's, do you ever find that? It's like, be careful what you wish for. You and people say, I want to change.
All the time, 100%. I mean, look, if I always say that I believe that people that come to me have been activated and only somebody who's been activated knows what that means. And so when I work with people, they're here to make something happen. And so I operate from that understanding that if you're talking to me, you have something to do and you're being called to step up and get it done, because that's what I do. I help people to get that done. And we do it fast, because I've done this many, many times, and the strategies are not difficult. I mean, you're going to have to make changes. And so I think that that's really, at the end of the day, the big question we all have to ask ourselves. Was I born to be mediocre? Was I born to slide through? Was I born to be non-remarkable? Was I born to work myself to death and then retire and then die? Is that really what I was born to do? And so if you say, well, my goal in life is to do the absolute minimum I need to make to make enough money so I can pay my bills, go to the pub a couple times a week and get hammered with my friends, so I don't have to think about on how much I hate my life and pretend that that is the essence of life. Don't worry about anybody else. Don't worry about the world. Don't worry about my impact. Don't worry about anything other than myself, so that I can get myself to retirement, so I can take a couple of vacations in Spain, or you know what I mean, or go to a soccer game. If that's what you think you came here to do, I don't think that I'd be having a lot of conversation with these kinds of people. But when people come to me, they have this feeling that they have to accomplish something different than what they're doing. And so if you have that feeling, if you're listening to this podcast and you have this feeling, well, congratulations, you do. That's why you're here. That's why you're listening to this right at this very minute, because you clearly needed to hear this. So get up, do something, because I don't think there's anything more crushing to a life than not having done anything you could do to accomplish what you came here to do, or follow a dream. I said this to my daughter, who's getting married next year. And so, so now I'm working on my will and the testament, and all of this has to be redone. And I said to her, if I were to bite the bullet today, I want you to remember that I have a fabulous life. And I've met so many wonderful, interesting people. I've been all over the world. I mean, I created a life I truly, truly enjoy. Yes. I mean, it was hard and difficult and nobody gave me anything, but at the end of the day, do I feel like I have something to show for? I do. I said, so please, and she's, why are you doing the testament? I said, well, because things need to be taken care of. Are you not telling me something? No, it's just something that needs to be dealt with. I said, do you want to make certain life and death decisions for me? She says, no. I said, well, good. Then why don't you let me, in true form, let me make my own decisions all the way to the end. But that's what it is. It's like, are you really in this moment of feeling that connection with the universe, with the spirit, with the power, where you feel that you are really at the right time, at the right place, doing the right thing, going somewhere? That's the question. Or are you okay with where you are? Because if you're okay with where you are, then stay there. Because only if that pain of staying there is greater than the fear of changing, will you change.
How does that connection feel for you?
It's everything. I feel sometimes when I work with my clients, and, I was just doing a strategy session before we got on the podcast, and there's this moment, where the pieces are coming together and we are pulling it out, and, you feel the hesitancy of the client coming in, and then suddenly, the language falls into place, and then she's repeating it. And I literally feel it in my body, right? I feel it. I get my hair stands up. I said, that's it. That's it. Now we are in the zone. So I don't know. It, trust, believe, experience, not giving a shit. I don't know. All of the above. I just have faith that it comes together.
What's your soul values?
Honesty. Trust. Believe. Faith. Not the Catholic faith, but faith in the universal energy. Integrity. And love.
I get half of them. On a soul level?
On a soul level? On a soul level, I think it's about connectedness. If I were to put it in one word, it really is the connectedness. I think that's the most important, because if you're connected, everything else will fall into place.
Yeah, because I think love, faith, and belief, and that connection, I think are, to me, they are soul values. You strip the human out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the bit, you know, it's, so I'm now testing your values here, but, you know, it's that, but it is that sort of, you know, almost honesty and trust. It's like, that should be a given. You know what I mean? It's like there's a fear that that's come through lack, that it's become a headline because of an incident. Does that make sense?
Yes, 100%. I mean, I think that what we went through with the pandemic and the whole political insanity that we experienced recently is that it shook our core values on such a fundamental level that a lot of people are very disconnected from what they even can believe in. And so, you know, again, depends on where you get your information from, that determines what you kind of believe in. So, but trust, I think there's a lot of rebuilding of trust necessary on whether it's people that have been vaccinated against the people that are not vaccinated, the non-vaccinated, the mad at the vaccinators because they're risking their lives. And, you know, and people that are for this political party against this political party, and people that want to tell other people what to do and that believe that what they say is the right thing. I mean, we are not in an environment of trust right now. And so I believe that I don't even know how we're going to rebuild that. I think we rebuild that in our individual relationships, one relationship at a time, which is why I want to build this new business code, because it will help people to recognize this concept of being different as a strength and not as a yelling point.
Do you find building trust easy?
No. No, it's not something that comes easy. It's something that, you know, it depends on our past history and our old story and our core wound and where we come from. I mean, my mother's nuts. So, you know, I have so much betrayal in my childhood that the word trust itself was a joke until really I met, you know, my current partner, where for the first time I felt that someone's connection to me felt like a blanket, like a protective blanket. Like I always feel his love like a blanket around me. I've never felt that way before, not in my family. So that, with that, now you can trust, because you now have this feeling reestablished where you can build on that. But before that, I always watched my back. I mean, I still watch my back with most people. Trust is earned, in my opinion. And people do what people need to do to save themselves. And even people who you often think are worthy do things that are primarily beneficial for them over you. That's just human nature, I think. But trust is a touchy one. I think trust is hard for most people.
And in your work, when you connect with people, you know, clients, I mean, can you really see them? Does that make sense? Can you really sort of see what's going on? Do you, can you, you know, because you talked earlier about your intuition, you know, it's like, and I'm curious, does that really come into play in terms of connection? And, you know, that, that it's a, there's a trust there, right? You know, but you can be quite empathetic or sensitive to that. Does that make sense? Is that something that resonates with you?
Yeah, I mean, I think what I'm hearing is that there's a combination, you know. So number one, I've done the work. I'm a Myers-Briggs practitioner, so I really learned about personality types, and you know, I'm an intuitive, so I learned about who I am and how I process information and what the pitfalls are as this type of person, and then I learned about what other people are and how you need to show up for different personality types to make sure that they feel heard. And when you do that, yeah, I want to answer that with the resounding yes. I want to say I probably get it about 90% of the time. I get it spot on, because it's a combination of pushing them out of their comfort zone and leading them toward a goal that they've set for themselves that they haven't been able to achieve themselves. So they're going somewhere where they haven't been before, or they feel that they already know, but they can't put it together. So that's a really awkward thing sometimes when you have a client who's done all the work, but they still can't put it together. Well, that's because you can't see your own blind spots. The fish doesn't know it's wet, right? So, so there's trust there that I can help them with that. So you tread carefully. I mean, you push them, you pull back, you ask them, you know, I always ask, does that resonate with you? I watch their body language. If there is no immediate resonance, right? If there's no, where, you know, when the energy changes and suddenly they're like talking about it and they're more animated, or they're like, you know, you haven't hit it yet. You keep working until you get it right.
No, it's fascinating, isn't it? You know, because some people talk about, you know, being able to see it, you know, where they see it, they feel it when somebody, that when they've either connected or they've hit that golden thread, or that moment, as you say, when you know you're on the money, you're in the right place, you know, and working that through.
Yeah, but I don't want to project what I'm experiencing onto them. I mean, sometimes I know we are spot on and they're not ready to receive it. So that's not going to work. So it's always, when you work with other people, you have to respect where they are at. And then that becomes your, that becomes the starting point to everything. It's like, where are they? I have to meet them where they are at and see how far I can take them. And my whole system is designed to take them there in steps and not at once, because it's too much. It's overwhelming. You know, you have to get people step by step to that next process and until they're ready.
How do you preserve your energy in situations like that? Because you're going to their energy level. You're, as you say, you're a little bit, not too much, you know, you're very energy intensive, you know, to be able to hold that space, to be able to be at that level, whatever level it is, you know, because I know many find that quite draining, right?
Well, lately very poorly. I think it has to do with, for me, you know, it's interesting because Gary and I, we just had a conversation about it this weekend, and we both have been going like crazy. His business has increased over 300%, and you know, and I'm making a lot of strides in the last 3 months, and so we're finding ourselves just going full speed the entire time. I mean, the one thing that I do, and I do this just about every day, is my mindset piece. I always listen to a podcast or something on mindset, because I need to really stay in that space of clarity and positivity. And you know, with the pandemic, physically it's been a lot more difficult, because you know, you can't really pop over at 9 o'clock to the gym when it's not safe to do so. So I'm, you know, really having to get myself back on a better routine, because it's just been absolutely intense, because it's like everybody I've ever spoken to all of a sudden calls me all at once. And now I need to get my own systems and processes in order so I can handle this without the burnout, because at this rate, I'm at burnout rate, but you know, I'm hiring, putting people in place, we're onboarding, we're handing over as much, I'm letting go as much as I possibly can, which is what I had to do the last time before I sold the business. It's like, you know, that's how you create the value in the organization, is that you have a standard operational procedure with different people that can do what needs to be done. So it's not just set on you. So that's a benefit. And so, yeah, terrible right now. Ask me in a month again. I'll hope I'll have a better answer for you.
I mean, I appreciate your honesty, right? Because that's, you know, a lot of people say, yeah, we're killing it, you know, 100%. It's all over it, you know. But no, I appreciate your honesty with that. Because, yeah, it's very telling of a person, you know, and where you're at. Are you aware of what you're capable of?
I always think I'm more capable of more things than I'm really capable of. I think the truth of the matter is, like, let's just be really honest here. I think that being, you know, over 50, definitely I'm feeling that now more than I've ever felt it before, that there just is a different rhythm now that's happening, where it's much easier for me to see things faster, and I'm better than I've ever been at what I do. But I still want to go at the same pace that I've always gone. And that's, you know, and I'm recognizing that this past weekend, I've had a complete crash. Like, I was out, but I've pushed myself really hard for the last month. And then this weekend, my body says, no more. And that gets scary sometimes. And then you have to realize, okay, what do I need to change to get myself in a better position, because this is not working. Again, back in the facts, if I crash on the weekend where I'm supposed to be having fun, just so I can put myself back together, so I can do this again from Monday through Friday, I'm not doing something right. So I need to change that.
That's the lesson though, right? Isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Because when you look at those that are, you know, 40 plus, 45 plus, 50 plus, 60 plus, whatever. It's when they realize, it's like, I can't run the entire company. I can't do 48-hour days or whatever amazing feats of human engineering they're capable of doing. And to the point going, I got to get smart. I can't physically keep up, right? And there, almost the conscious mind gives way to the subconscious mind. You know, the masculine energy hands over to the feminine energy and saying, we need to get smart here. I beat my head off the wall. Time to bring in the big guns and the universe and everything, right?
Yeah, but then again, you know, what makes me think that I have to work this way? So what is it that I'm not trusting, if it's out there for me, you know, to really have that, if that's really mine, then why do I have to kill myself in the process? I mean, that's not really a good mindset either. So obviously there's still some stuff that needs to be looked into on why I find it necessary to constantly have to prove on how hard I can work. Oh, that's right. That's my programming from my childhood, because nothing ever was good enough. And, you know, and you try to get somebody's attention your entire life, who never gives it to you. So you just keep going and going and going until you'll kill yourself. Oh, that's right. That's the family pattern. Until they literally kill themselves. Hmm. Okay, I'm doing the exact same thing. Bravo.
It's a noble death, right?
A noble death.
Died working. Congratulations.
All to repeat the same pattern again. Woot, woot.
You ever been afraid of being seen? Truly seen?
No. Maybe before. Now, no. But being seen comes with a lot of has a dark side and a bright side. Because when you get to the point where you really speak your truth, there are a lot of people that do not want to hear it. And you go under attack. I mean, I have received death threats. I've been called every name on the planet by men who do not want women like me to say what I have to say. I mean, happens all the time. So they say that when you get to that point of the clarity of the message or the true empowerment, a certain polarization happens because people want to prohibit you from saying things, and where others are elevated by what you say. And I definitely am at that point.
What's a proud moment for you?
A proud moment? That I was able to raise my daughter by myself, and that she has found love, and that she is now with someone who looks at her like she's the cat's meow, the best thing to ever walk the planet. And I couldn't be happier that my child has found love. I mean, that to me is everything.
What about you?
For me, pride, I live my passion every day. And I too have found love. And I'm very proud of that. And who knew that was possible? Certainly. At a certain age, right, when most people think it's all over. And I feel very, very blessed. I mean, truly.
What would you like to achieve, you know?
Aside from world peace? No. I want...
Nobel Prize. Give or take a couple of global awards. Yeah.
I really want to change the way women and men work together. I really do. I want to change the face of leadership into something that's more balanced.
How will you know when that's done?
Because there's going to be a moment where I'm going to go and say to you on our next interview, Mighty Pete, they're all copying me. And then you're going to say to me, remember on the show that you were at, this is what you said to me. You said to me, and at the point when the whole world is doing it, I know that I've handed it over successfully.
Do you think, I mean, is it like the changing of the guard? It's just you've got large, aged, you know, institution, if you like, and then you've got the new funky entrepreneurial upstart, quick start, whatever start, you know, companies. Is it a changing of a guard? Do you think there is going to be a phasing out process? Where do you sit there?
Yes, it's definitely a changing of the guard. It's a number of different things. I think it's, for one, it's a whole generation, Gen Z, who says they don't have a diversity problem because they're by nature diverse and they're the most diverse generation ever. So they look at us and they say it's our problem. If you're Gen Z and you're listening to this, I got news for you. Guess what we said to our parents when we were that generation? We told our parents we didn't have the problem. It was your problem because they were so stuck up. And so guess what your children are going to say to you when they're that age? They're going to tell you that that problem is your problem and not their problem. It's just a part of the generations. But each generation does make an advancement in some way where you see that the change is just holding a little bit more and holding a little bit more. I think what we're seeing and what we really recognize in politics is that this is the last bastion of holding on to an existing old power structure, and it's clearly cracking at the seams. I mean, it's that the power grab and the language and the we must force, you know, I mean, it's unbelievable. So I do think that there is a change of guards. We're seeing this rise of nationalism and wanting to tell people what to do. And I think it's going to eventually sizzle away because it can't hold, because there's so many more coming that do not believe in that. And so we have the generational piece. We have also a peace in between the different races and the way how much more diverse our world is becoming by the pure nature that people are having sex with different people, people that look other than them, and then they have babies, and that just changes everything. And because people right now, as what we see in the Great Resignation, not wanting to be in existing structures. It's a number of things that are all playing together. Yes, it is a changing of guard, for sure.
You can't help but think or hope, can you, that we're on the right path? It's a bumpy road, right? But change is happening. You know, just hope it's in the right way and shape and form, right?
I was listening to something really powerful this morning, and it said that unless this is your cause, right? Unless that is what you're here to do, like being in politics or changing one particular subject, stop obsessing over it, because what you do makes absolutely no difference other than it makes you crazy. Focus on the thing that you came here to do and make that impact in that genre, right? Because that's your piece. So I think there's a lot to be said to that, because if I focus on all the different things that could be improved, I'll make myself crazy, because everything can be improved. Mm. So I have to focus on that which I can improve.
Mm. No, it's true, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
Are you the true you, and you, are you as close to you as you'll ever be, do you think?
Yes. Oh, for sure. What means close to me, meaning aware, okay with who I am. Yeah.
Back, I suppose, and you know, you'll know, I mean, all the sort of the, you know, your childhood, who you are, and we go off on this little journey of life, and you know, we satisfy and we please somebody, and we, you know, we pick up all their beliefs and all the rest until we eventually start to pick them off and drop them. You know, I do think we get to the point, I mean, some might say it's, you know, where you become a grumpy old man or a grumpy old woman, you go, I don't give a shit what anyone else thinks, this is me. There's a point when probably it goes a bit too far, but, you know, I don't know, I think we just, there's no curtains, it's just is. And it's, well, for me, that's a moment of beauty, that's a moment of genius, because, as you say, it's like, if it's not your passion, just don't, yeah, okay, I wish it wasn't that way, but it's not my thing. So best of luck.
I mean, what else is there to say about that, right? I think that the journey for us in this go around is about figuring out who we are, what we came here to do, and then do that to the best of our abilities and not settle for mediocrity and for anything less than what you believe you're capable of. And that makes you be okay. So I don't have that voice at night in bed, when I lay in bed, that goes, why did you say that? Why did you behave that way? I don't have that. I haven't had that in a long time, but I did used to have that where I, you know, relive the whole day, play by play by play, and just mad at myself for having said something stupid or done something stupid or should have not done that. You know, it's like, I don't have that anymore. It's like, so what? We're human. It's a human condition, imperfection.
Perfectly imperfect, right?
Yeah, 100%.
What's the nicest thing someone could say to you? Do you take a compliment? How are you with compliments, by the way?
As a matter of fact, that's one of my things that I have said, that one of the conditions I made with God is that I wanted to get a thank you note every single day of my life, so I knew I was on the right path. So most of the thank you notes that I get, and which I love, and the nice thing I hear is that I help people to figure out who they are and get closer to what they want. I really love that.
Why though? Why does it do it for you?
It just reinforces the purpose for me.
Is that your life mission? Is that your calling, Jake?
I think that a lot of times for those of us who've gone through a lot of adversity in life, that we channel that into helping others to not have to experience that, or if they did, to get closer to a better outcome. And in a way that helps me, I don't want to say reconcile my past, but, you know, because I've been so severely abused, I think it counteracts that for me, that I can help others to not get stuck in that story, but give them the power to make something out of themselves, because that's what I had to figure out how to do. And that's to me, that's very powerful.
What does that leave you with? Is that fear? Is that strength? Is that character? What is it?
Happiness.
Well, that's profound.
Total happiness.
Some people will get that and some won't, right?
Yes, you give it what you can, and some people can turn that into something and some people cannot. Because it's the information isn't the problem. The information's out there. It is the desire, the ability, and the persistence to stay with the change that makes the impact and that turns the boat. And so if you have a story of resilience, then people believe that it can be done more, because it's not a princess story. The princess story, I woke up with a crown on my head, and then one day somebody handed me the queen crown, and then I became the queen. It's hardly a story that people go like, yeah, you know, she fought her way through it. But if you say, well, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened, and I did it anyway, then people go like, shit, if she did that, then what I'm dealing with is like nothing. And that's what I remind myself all the time. It's like, in the adversity is a gift. Find it.
What are you great at and what are you terrible at?
I'm really great at creating systems and processes, understanding people, making people feel really good about themselves. And
just break that down for us, first of all, because I mean, systems and processes and helping people, that they're two different sciences almost.
No. That's where you're all wrong. This goes hand in hand. Because the systems and processes that I create are designed for the very people that are using them. So that's, I think, how those poor systems and processes are always so misunderstood, because we we can build them so they work for people. Yeah. And that's, you know, that if the structures are created inflexible, then of course they can't work. But if the structures are created in such a way that they have the flexibility that you can bring your own furniture, basically, you know, then you're good. It's just, if I force you into something, it doesn't. I compare this to Marion Williamson said once, you have to imagine life's like, you know, a backyard that God built. And so he sends you in the backyard and he says, you know, I don't care if you're on the swing, if you're playing in the sandbox, if you getting dirty, if you ride your bike, if you climb in the tree, because I deem this a safe environment for you. So do whatever you want. And so systems and processes that I built are very much like that. You know, it's a backyard. We built it to size, to your size. And so, because a good system and a process supports a person's wishes, desires, and ideology.
Which is the opposite of that, you know, that sort of, you describing that sort of, you know, assessment procedure in that last company. It's kind of going, my question says, you know, what do you need to be better at?
Yeah. Do you need to get better at throwing the ball? I don't like throwing the ball. Well, but I want you to throw the ball. but I never play with the ball. I rather play on the swing. Absolutely.
No. Yeah. Get a better process. Hmm. What are you terrible at?
What am I terrible at? Sometimes I'm really bad at a lot of this really emotional stuff that really overwhelms me. So my daughter is very emotional and my mother is emotional. And I find that when somebody is very emotional, they oftentimes just need to talk about their feelings, and they need to talk about their feelings a lot. And sometimes over and over again, that completely overloads me. I cannot handle it. I can handle it for a period of time, but I have to set myself a time limit. Like sometimes I have to set myself like a 15, 20 minute time limit. I cannot. I have a girlfriend and she always wants to talk to me about these breakthroughs and feelings and old stories. And sometimes I just can't listen to this because it's too, it's like, okay, great. So you had the epiphany. What are you going to do now? But she doesn't want to talk about what she wants to do now. She wants to talk about all the feelings that she has because she just had this breakthrough moment. Whereas I go, well, great. You had the breakthrough moment. What are you going to do now? So that's what I'm not good at, is in the, just staying in the empathetic listening mode without wanting to come up with a process or a system to fix it.
Are you quietly all the time just going, yep, I could build this. I could. It's like, yeah, involuntary. It's like, yeah, by the way, I just mapped the whole goddamn lot, you know, but.
I mean, you're laughing, you're smiling, but it's exactly how my brain works. I'm like, oh, we can solve that really easily. So here's how we can do this. Like step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And they go like, what? Because that's not the conversation that they're having. That's just the way my brain works. I just got to recognize that's how my brain works.
Are you kinesthetic?
Probably more visual, but yeah.
Competitive? Yeah.
People say I'm competitive. I don't think I'm competitive, but maybe only competitive people think that they're not competitive. So I leave that up. I leave that up to other people to determine that. Probably competitive in the sense I want to see how far I can push it. Mm. That I do.
Mm. Yeah. No, I kind of. That's, we all have sort of places to be and things to do. Yeah. No, it's very true. Talk to me about your book.
So my first book is called Happy Woman, Happy World. And I wrote this book called The Foolproof Fix to Get from Overwhelmed to Awesome for women under the tag The Women's Code, because I recognized that in order to make any changes in the structure at all, we know there's a men's code. We know there's no women's code. And so I recognized that women first have to learn to be better with each other and have to have a code of conduct amongst ourselves before we can even go out there and ask for the things that we really want to ask for and succeed. And so Happy Woman, Happy World has a couple of key concepts. It talks about the different types of paradoxes that women are up against, of which we've mentioned some of them, you know, that perfectionism and what we're being taught and what we are up against. And I have a proprietary concept I developed called ego rhythm, which helps you to figure out where in your life's journey you are and what rhythm you're in and what rhythm you are in next. And it basically just shares the idea that you can have everything, just not all at once, and how to really own that and live a more fulfilled life, knowing that you don't have to be everything to everyone all the time, but one thing at a time. And, yeah, and the book won a couple of awards, and you know, I've written it as a soft cover, and in a size that it can be carried in a purse, and in chapters that are short enough that when you leave it in the bathroom, you got a good chance that your partner will actually read them.
written by a woman for women, formatted for a man.
Exactly.
That's like a winner right there, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm just going to leave this here for you. For me, for you, maybe. No, that's cool. You proud of it?
Very much so, yeah. Yeah, it made a lot of impact in a lot of people's lives and, you know, has been the basis of a lot of my conversations and my speaking engagements and my workshops and my learning and development programs. It's all around how do we help women to be unapologetically themselves? And how do we strip all of that and let people shine for what they're bringing to the table instead of forcing them to learn Excel pivot tables? Why don't we bring someone on the team who can do that and who is happy and wants to do that and have this other person have you do something you absolutely, you love.
Getting a lot there in the language, you know, that sort of needing, wanting, loving to, having to, you know, it's, I mean, how many organizations are based like that? It's like kind of going, your employee 1, 2, 3, and that's position there. And your job is X, Y, and Z, full stop. Or as you say, what's your skills? Where are you best suited? What could you do? What do you want to do?
But that's changing. That's changing. So I wrote an insights paper called The Future of Leadership. So if anyone's interested in reading that, you can find that at diversified.world. And this insights paper was where I interviewed C-level executives and CHROs and CEOs. And what's changing because of the immense pressure that they are under right now, they need you to walk in the office now and tell them your unapologetic value proposition. They need you to walk in and say, here's what I'm good at. This is what I can do. Don't put me there. Here's where I can shine for you. And this is what I will do for you. And subsequently, I developed a whole program around the unapologetic value proposition, teaching people on how to do that. Because if you don't know how to talk about yourself or how to present yourself, there's no winning right now. Absolutely. This is a fundamental requirement at this time.
Where do you shine?
Did I mention systems and processes?
That's your thing.
Yeah, strategy. Really, strategy is my favorite thing in the world. And because it allows me to use my ability to connect things, and it allows me to work with people, and it allows me to bring people together, and it allows me to create, be a part of a creation. And so when things come together, you know, again, you know, I do a strategy day facilitation, and I love it. I mean, I was just doing one last week, and there was a moment where I just stood there and I said, isn't this so much fun? And everybody had this look of disbelief on their face.
I have to be here. It's like, oh, great. You're so lucky.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's awesome. But yeah, no, I get it. I get it. No, tell me, what's a guilty pleasure for you?
Guilty pleasure. My guilty pleasure is I love chocolate and I...
Love chocolate. What's your go-to?
I mean, good chocolate, like Swiss chocolate, like truffles chocolate, good chocolate. And I like being outside. That recharges me, skiing, hiking, and guilty pleasure. I don't think I have really a lot of, well, I like drinking rum. There you go.
Any particular type?
Well, my favorite rum is Zaya. That's sort of my everyday rum. And then there is the 12-year Fleur de Cagne. And that's for special occasions.
Nice.
Or the special occasion is when we drink it.
Every occasion is an occasion, right?
There you go.
It's the power of now. It's like, why are we celebrating? Because it's now. Love it. Tell me, if you were trying to describe your fire in the belly in one or two words, what would they be?
My fire in the belly is to take as many people with me as I possibly can.
In a good way.
In a great way.
I feel that. It's great. So powerful. Where can people find out more, learn more, hunt you down, track you down, stalk you, any of the above?
Yeah, go ahead and do that. Do all of that. So number one, I always like to hear from the audience. So if you heard something, go to beatashillette.com/contact and just send me a note. I answer all my own emails. There's no in between. It comes directly to my inbox because remember, I like thank you notes. I like hearing. So if you have something to thank us for this conversation, don't hold back. Please shoot it over. That's my lifeblood. That gives me the juice. If you want to look at the book, just go to happywomanhappyworld.com or go to Amazon. It's available as an ebook, a printed book, and also as an audiobook. And if you have heard something about business building or strategy and you want your strategy, do reach out. I'll be happy to make a couple of uncovery sessions available for your audience, Mighty Pete. So go to uncoverysession.com and fill it out. Just make sure you put in fire in the belly somewhere so I know where you're coming from so I can count them. And be happy to give you a complimentary uncovery session that's valued at $500. And I'll take you through where you are, where you might be stuck, and what you need to resolve to move forward. And I can do that in about 30 to 45 minutes.
Wow, that's amazing. It's really, really fantastic. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
What's the final message you'd like to leave our listeners?
I mean, if I were to look at our conversation and I say, what is it that sums it all up? It's probably two things. It's number one, failure and adversity is a road sign that tells you not this way. And just look at it as that, that you just figure eliminated a way to not to go, number one. And number two, if things are not going the way you want them to go, start with your self-awareness of where you really are at, because this is called fire in the belly. So I assume that everybody's here has a passion. And if your passion doesn't love you back as much as you love it, then you probably have to make a couple of tweaks or adjustments. So start with that today, you know, and really look at what's going on and then make the changes. Do the work to get that fire in the belly to burn like an inferno and not like a little teeny little match.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, find your uniqueness and do it. It's been awesome. Well, I'll be your thank you note for today. So listen, thank you for coming on. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for being, genuinely, I think you're being very open and honest. And that that says a lot, I think, for a lot of people. So, and for sharing. So, yeah, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for all the great work that you're doing and helping people to keep that fire going. Very important. I appreciate you too.
Thank you.
Well, that was another great episode of Fire in the Belly. You know, this really wouldn't be possible without our great guests taking the time to share their personal journeys. And boy, oh boy, sometimes it is personal. It's an absolute pleasure to have that, and then to hear the journeys that people have been on. We've loads more episodes coming up soon, and it's always a pleasure to have guests on. If you do happen to know anyone with true fire in their belly, please reach out to us so we can share their journey, lessons and successes. So, all that's left to say is have a great day, live with fire in your belly, and be the mightiest version of you.